Ziemlich sehr viel Wort gesagt, bis wir hören sollen.
Thank you, councillors. Ladies and gentlemen, please remain standing for the opening prayer and reconciliation statement. The opening prayer reads, Almighty God, we humbly beseech thee to vouchsafe thy blessing upon this council, direct and prosper its deliberations to the advancement of thy glory and the welfare of the people whom we serve. Amen. The reconciliation statement declares that Melton City Council acknowledges that the land it now occupies has a history that began with its Indigenous occupants, the Kulin Nation. Council pays its respects to the Kulin Nation people and their elders and descendants past and present. Thank you, councillors, council staff and members of the gallery. You may be seated. Councillors, moving on to item number two, apologies and leave of absence. Mr. Tory.
There is an apology this evening, Madam Mayor, from Councillor Ramsey.
Thank you. Item number three, change to the order of business.
No changes, Madam Mayor.
Item number four, deputations.
We have no deputations this evening.
Item number five, declaration of any pecuniary interest, other interest or conflict of interest of any councillor. I would like to declare that I have a conflict arising from an indirect interest in item 11.4 in tonight's ordinary meeting of council dated 4th of April 2016 under section 78E of the Local Government Act 1989 because of the impact of my residential amenity, and under section 79(2) subsection A.II of the Local Government Act 1989, I have advised the CEO accordingly. Are there any other declaration of any pecuniary interest, other interest or conflict of interest of any councillor?
Madam Mayor, I too have an indirect interest in item 11.1 due to the impact of residential amenity also.
Thank you, Councillor Dunn. Item number six, adoption and confirmation of minutes of previous meetings.
Madam Mayor, I'd like to move that the minutes of the ordinary meeting of Council held on the 7th of March 2016 be confirmed as a true and correct record.
Thank you, Councillor Colliari. Do I have a councillor to second the motion?
I'll second that. Thanks, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Councillor Carley. Do I have any councillor who opposes the motion? I therefore declare it carried. Item number seven, correspondence inward, 7.1. We have a parliamentarian and departmental letters received by the Mayor, by the Honourable James Merlino, MP, Deputy Premier and Minister for Education, Government School Provision for Melton. And I will just briefly read the highlights, and it's regarding government schools provision in Melton. The Andrews Labor Government is committed to investing in education and school infrastructure as demonstrated through the allocation of $730 million to school facilities in a 2015-16 state budget. The government has already committed to developing a senior secondary school in Taylor's Hill, which will ease some of the enrolment pressures for secondary age students in the Caroline Springs area. Funding for the acquisition of this site was provided in the 2015-16 state budget. Our challenge is to deliver new schools to meet the needs of growing communities as well as responsibly prioritise the needs of over 1,500 existing government schools across the state, all in varying condition. The department will continue to work with the Melton City Council to monitor and plan for the government education provision in the area to ensure all Victorian students have access to high quality education as the population continues to grow. And that once again was a letter written by the Honourable James Merlino, MP, Deputy Premier, Minister for Education. So I have a recommendation, councillors, that the parliamentarian and departmental letters received by the Mayor be received and noted. Do I have a mover?
Madam Mayor, I'd like to move the recommendation that the parliamentarian and department letters received by the Mayor be received and noted.
Thank you, Councillor Colliari. Do I have a seconder?
Madam Mayor, I'd like to second that. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Carley. Do I have any councillor who opposes the motion? I therefore declare it carried. Item number 8, petitions and joint letters.
Madam Mayor, I have a petition signed by 64, and it reads, with the undersigned, strongly request that the City of Melton cancel the lease agreement with Vodafone at 72-80 Caroline Springs Boulevard, Caroline Springs, Victoria, and in doing so, forego the $13,000 in annual rent in response to...
Sorry, Councillor Dunn, I will have to stop you here and declare an interest, as I mentioned previously, as I am not allowed to under the Local Government Act, and that I've declared the indirect interest, I actually have to step out of the chamber. So can I ask Councillor Quagliari if she could take the chair, please?
Sorry, Madam Mayor.
That's all right. All right, you can carry on, Councillor Dunn.
Sorry about that. I was steaming along. We request this action on the basis that Vodafone, City of Melton, did not write to all schools, sporting clubs, kindergartens, childcare centres, before and after school care centres, within a 300 metre radius of the site in relation to the application for a permit to build a mobile phone tower. In doing so, occupiers, students, teachers, parents of students, members of sporting clubs and all other employees were not given the opportunity to comment or object to the application. This is a breach of both Planning Industry Code C564-2011 mobile phone base station deployment as well as natural justice. We are open to Vodafone finding an alternative, more suitable location in contrast to this community-sensitive location for the mobile phone tower in full consultation with the local community.
Thank you, Councillor Dunn. All right, can I get someone to call the mayor in?
Thank you, Councillor Quagliari. Are there any other petitions and joint letters? Councillor Turner.
Madam Mayor, I'd like to present this petition on behalf of 435 residents the reopening of Thrice Lane Kanjang to through traffic. The humble petition of we, the undersigned residents and ratepayers of the Melton in the state of Victoria, sheweth that we urgently request the Melton Council immediately reopen to through traffic Thrice Lane Kanjang. The through opening of Thrice Lane will provide a second access point which is vital to ensure traffic can access the Kanjang area, especially given the concerns related to fire and safety. The area has around 1,064 homes, three schools and shops, and growing, and all residents are currently dependent on only one access road, Kanjang Drive. This situation is totally unsatisfactory and potentially puts at risk many lives. Your petitioners therefore pray that Melton City Council reopen Thrice Lane as a matter of urgency at the earliest possible time, and your petitioners, as in duty bound, will ever pray.
Thank you, Councillor Turner. Thank you. Item number 9, resumption of debate or any other business carried over from a previous meeting.
There's no carried over business for this evening, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Tory. Item number 10, public question time.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just would like to firstly draw to your attention that the first three questions that will be dealt with this evening relate to the matter in which you have declared a conflict of interest, and therefore I advise you of that prior to proceeding with those questions to give you the opportunity to vacate the chamber.
Thank you, Mr. Tory, and I'll ask Councillor Quagliari if she can take the seat.
Thank you, Mr. Tory.
Thank you, Councillor Quagliari. First question this evening, councillors, is from Seamus Ryan. Mr. Ryan is in the gallery. Question reads, to officers, if councillors do not vote in favour of your recommendation to note petition and take no action, and choose option two, to seek Vodafone approval to break the lease, can you please advise, one, what process will council go through to offer an alternative location for the tower? And two, are council prepared to cover relocation costs to Vodafone? And if so, how much are council prepared to spend on these costs? At this point, this question, Mr. Ryan, is very hypothetical, given that council will consider that report this evening, and it does depend on what council resolves as a matter of considering that report. However, should council resolve as indicated in your question, I will seek detailed legal advice on the appropriate process to follow to protect council's interests. At this point, council has not turned its mind to any relocation costs or damages claim that may result, and so I cannot comment on the second part of the question. That would be a matter for subsequent council determination. The second question is also from Mr. Ryan, and it reads, in relation to item 11.4, report in this evening's agenda, if councillors vote to approach Vodafone to seek the cancellation of the lease agreement, can council confirm whether this approach will be in the format of a formal meeting with Vodafone? If so, will council confirm that committee members from Residents Against the Mobile Phone Tower at Brookside Recreation Reserve can also attend this meeting on behalf of the community, given that our actions have led to this course of action today, and therefore, should that be the course of action, and therefore residents should have a say in the process to choose a more suitable location. So again, Mr. Ryan, similar to the previous question, it is somewhat hypothetical at this point in time, preceding the matter being considered by council. However, as stated, should council so resolve, detailed legal advice will be sought on the appropriate process to be followed. That being said, it is my belief or understanding that the initial contact with Vodafone would be in writing, and we would then determine what the action was following their response to that formal written approach. The next question is from Michelle Spiteri, which also relates to item 11.4 on tonight's agenda, and Ms. Spiteri is in the gallery. Question one, in relation to item 11.4 on tonight's agenda, our group strongly dismissed the comparison, and by our group, I'm not sure the exact detail of the group, doesn't define the group. It says our group strongly dismiss the comparison that the mobile phone tower at Brookside Recreational Reserve is similar in nature to the 20-metre floodlight that was taken down as previously raised. It is 50% taller at 30 metres and over 100% wider at the bottom, 96 centimetres. Compared to the existing floodlight tower that was taken down. We know this because we measured both back in January when the equipment was on the site prior to it being completed. As Council did not contest this point of difference with Vodafone at the time of application for the permit, can Council define what they regard as similar in nature to in terms of planning, and give examples of what this might mean? Mr. Peter Bean, General Manager, Planning and Development, will respond.
Thanks for the question, Michelle. Look, Council acknowledges that the telecommunications facility is obviously significantly larger than the previous light pole it replaced. The comparison, however, is made in the context that the reserve accommodates a number of existing light poles that are a significant visual element in the local landscape, and that the telecommunications facility replaces one of those poles with another pole albeit higher than what was there previously, but in the context of it, it's about the fact that it has the same shape, it has the same cylindrical look, and the materials used are the same as those as used in the other light pole materials. Thank you.
The next question is from Donna Southern, is in the gallery. And the question reads, Rockbank residents are surrounded... Oh, sorry, yes.
Yes, we'll need to call the mayor in.
Thank you, Councillor Collier.
Thank you, Mr. Tory.
Thank you, Councillor Cagliari. Please continue, Mr. Tory.
Madam Mayor, this question is from Donna Southern, who is in the gallery, and it reads, Rockbank residents are surrounded by new estate developments that are earmarked for natural gas connection. Many residents in the existing Rockbank settlement want to have natural gas connected to their homes. How can we move this request forward as a community? Again, Peter Bean will respond.
Thank you for that. Look, Council would note that AusNet Services are the responsible authority for the delivery of gas infrastructure to the Rockbank Township. Officers have contacted AusNet Services today and have been advised that gas infrastructure is slowly but surely nearing the town of Rockbank from the Taylors Road end, however, is still some distance away from the point of view of connectivity. As the development is further released closer to Rockbank Township, it would be suggested that if a street in entirety was wanting to connect to the gas systems, the residents collectively would be required to request an investigation which will be passed through our economic model, which will indicate that whether there's a shortfall and whether a contribution may be required or whether works can be done that can be more economically viable. We've been provided contact detail from AusNet Services, so if anybody in the community wishes to make an inquiry on this basis, which I'll provide in the written response to you, we are more than encouraging you to do that and participate in that. Thank you.
Next question is from Christian Singh. Is Mr. Singh in the gallery? Oh. I believe the subject matter will be covered in other questions. Strictly in accordance with the council local law, the person asking the question or submitting the question must be in attendance. Otherwise, it's just a written response that is provided. So there will be a written response provided, but I think the subject matter will be covered in other questions. Okay. So I take it that you are Stavroulis Singh. Okay. So the question from Stavroulis Singh is, Vodafone are now proposing that they will be providing comprehensive landscaping to screen the 18-metre monopole. With the trees, which will take years to mature, apparently screening part of the tower. A freestanding mobile phone tower, whether it be 25 metres or now the new amended height of 18 metres, cannot be classified as a low-impact facility. Residents' concerns remain unchanged regarding visual impact. Why can't alternative locations be considered? There's a second part to the question, which is, Council unanimously voted to refuse the initial application made last year and the past two applications made on the same subject land. Concreting the echoing the sentiments had by the residents whom they are elected to represent. Can the residents / community be at ease that they have your continued support? Again, Peter Bean to respond.
Thank you for that. Look, in relation to the proposed landscaping, it is acknowledged that any trees will take some years to reach the height where they provide an effective screen for the proposed facility. Nevertheless, once established, it is considered that they will assist in screening the facility from surrounding residential areas. The applicants, as part of the original application, provided details of two other sites that were investigated for the proposed facility. One was the Taylors Hill Recreation Reserve, and the other on the corner of Calder Park Drive and Hume Drive. Both of these sites were considered unsuitable based on either their proximity to existing residential properties or the construction maintenance difficulties that would be required and restricted with them being on that site. In regard to the second part of your question, look, whether Council continues to oppose a telecommunications facility on this site will be based on the amended proposal is a matter that's been considered by Council as an item in tonight's agenda, being item 11.7, so I'm unable to provide that answer at the moment. Thank you.
Next question is from David O'Connor. Mr O'Connor is in the gallery. Question reads, 2014-17 Melton Youth Strategy identifies young people aged between 10 and 25 years as representing one in five of all City of Melton residents. The summary of recommended actions highlight the need to further develop social enterprise programs and projects that improve the skills, confidence and capacity of young people. Will Council take this into account when reviewing the personal training use of public open spaces policy, creating an opportunity for young people who are studying health and fitness with a chance of establishing themselves in the business of personal training? Mr. Murray Heaney, General Manager, Community Services, to respond.
Thank you, David, for your question. In relation to that question at the moment, Council is currently undertaking a review of our what's called our personal training or use of public open space policy, and will consider the objectives of the Youth Strategy 2014-2017 to highlight the social enterprise programs and projects when completing this policy review. All personal trainers, as you're aware, using council facilities do have an obligation to meet the qualification requirements of the personal training policy. However, the provision of opportunities for young people is already in the existing criteria for accessing applications and will be maintained in the new policy. Thank you, Doug.
Next question is the second question from Mr. O'Connor, and it reads, although the state government has made a decision not to split Sunbury from the municipality of Hume, the debate for Diggers Rest to become part of Sunbury continues. Many residents living in Diggers Rest feel more connected with Sunbury than Melton, and as such question the value of service delivery and capital works projects being undertaken by council in Diggers Rest. In my opinion, given the small population and subsequent low rate base, Diggers Rest features quite well in the municipal budget compared to other small townships within the municipality of Melton. However, for the purpose of providing some clarity for the community of Diggers Rest, would Council please prepare a breakdown of historical expenditure together with projected forecasts of proposed projects specific to our township? Please find attached two news articles from 1981, which demonstrates a history of frustration and the desire by some to secede from Melton. And there are two articles attached. This will be responded to by Mr. Peter Bean.
Hi, David. Thanks for the question tonight. Look, in response to your question, I'll try and answer as best I can. The figures I've got perhaps aren't as specific as you might like, but I can probably provide a better breakdown in a written response to you. Look, no question of doubt, Council delivers a range of services to the Diggers Rest community. Some of them are actually quite unique to the Diggers Rest community that we don't provide elsewhere, and we've been quite specific in doing that, meeting the interests and the needs of the community in that area. When we talk about the maintenance and operation of sporting and community infrastructure, it certainly does come at significant cost, not only across the whole municipality, but certainly to a challenging place like Diggers Rest, where over the years, you know, we've had to deal with a lot of ageing and old infrastructure for such a small community, but we believe we've done it extremely well. Council sort of spends, you know, in the order of around $11 million per annum on routine maintenance on its roads, parks and trees, and a certain portion of that is shared within the Diggers Rest area. All council residents share the benefits from this expenditure. Certainly, in regard to just pulling out a specific thing, just specific to Diggers Rest in the 2016-17 financial year, Council is looking to spend over $60,000 just in footpath repairs in the Diggers Rest community area. In the last 5 years, when we look at capital works, Council has spent just in excess of $1 million on specific new capital works programs, and probably around, it's an estimation, about $700,000 in the maintenance and upkeep of the significant facilities within the Diggers Rest area. Now, this excludes services provided in regard to the provision of people that are operating out of those facilities. However, I must say with the growing community that Diggers Rest is, and it's certainly not the fastest growing in our municipality, but certainly one of the fastest growing in our municipality, our 10-year capital works program as it stands today, we are foreshadowing that we will be spending in the vicinity of $47 million over the next 10 years in the Diggers Rest, or the newly growing Diggers Rest area. So I hope that brings some comfort to you. Hopefully it sort of supports the frustration of people from the past that they may not be so frustrated in the future. Thanks for the question.
Thank you, Mr. Bean. Next question is from Kelly Jones. Is Ms. Jones in the gallery? Okay. Question reads, re-proposed monopole permit application number PA2015/4666, Melbourne Water Reserve, Taylors Hill, Vodafone, Hutchison. Currently with VCAT, reference number P1940/2015. Council unanimously voted to refuse the initial application made last year and the past two applications made on the same subject land, concreting and echoing the sentiments had by the residents whom they are elected to represent. Given that the recently amended plans failed to address the residents' concerns regarding the visual impact. In fact, the pole is even more visibly located in the centre of the reserve. Can the residents slash community be at ease that they have your continued support? Again, Mr. Peter Bean.
Thanks for the question, Kelly. Unfortunately, the response I have to give you is similar to the one I gave Steve Rule, and the fact that Council's considering it is item 11.7. And where the council continues to oppose the facility on the site, based on the amended proposal, is a bit of that. My apologies for that. I hope you heard what I said before. Sorry. But certainly be considered by council in item 11.7 tonight. Thank you.
The next question is also from Ms. Jones, and it has the same lead-in in terms of subject matter, and says that Vodafone allege the pole is required to redress inadequate Vodafone infrastructure in the area. The sighting of the pole near the water tower reduces its efficacy as it impedes the signal. The Vodafone coverage checker website states that on Hardware Lane, less than 10 metres from the pole and a 10K radius of the pole, have the highest level 4G outdoor coverage, and is on the edge of a, in quotation marks, limited indoor, end quotation mark, coverage. The proposed pole is not centrally located in this, again, quotation marks, limited area, and is therefore not optimally positioned for the purpose it claims to address. Have Council worked with the vendor to more optimally locate the pole, perhaps sympathetically disguised on the roof on the men's shed? Again, Mr. Peter Bean.
Thanks, Kelly. Look, the information provided as part of the original planning application indicates that the Melbourne Water site was located within the optimal area to achieve coverage of the Taylors Hill area, centred around the Hume Drive area. Two other sites were also investigated, one being on the Taylors Hill Rec Reserve in Omarama Way, and the other a light pole swap out at the corner of Calder Park Drive and Hume Drive, and I think I explained that previously that there were some challenges in regard to the maintenance and upkeep and access at those sites. I'm certainly not aware of the men's shed site being investigated as a possible candidate. It is a recent addition, asset addition to the council and the organisation, and therefore I can't comment on its suitability, except for noting that it is also located within a residential area, similar to the other sites mentioned. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bean. The next question is from Sharon and Craig Chamberlain. Are they in the gallery? I do note in their question they state that they're on holidays and unable to be here. Again, similar to the earlier response, in accordance with our local law, a written response will be provided. I do believe, however, though, that the subject matter is generally covered in the other questions that are presented this evening and in the officer's report when in relation to the monopole. So written responses will be provided. The next question is from Linda Duckham. Is Ms. Duckham is in the gallery? First question reads, as a pedestrian, I have been afraid on many occasions when crossing roads near roundabouts, e.g., today I crossed the roundabout at Alexandra and High Street in Melton. I saw a car slow down for another car in the roundabout, and as then picked up speed and almost ran me over as I was halfway across the road. I have seen other pedestrians in the same predicament many times. A. When will council provide safe crossings at roundabouts in the Melton municipality? And B. How will council provide safe crossings to ensure safe pedestrian use of roads? Mr. Peter Bean to respond.
Thanks for the question, Linda. Look, council will assess individual issues on their merits and include any proposed works in its capital works program. We will investigate the footpath crossing you've mentioned at Alexander Street and High Street roundabout, and certainly will provide a written response when the investigation is complete. Staff did meet with regional officers from Vic Roads last Thursday afternoon to discuss a number of the roundabout intersections, particularly along High Street, and I must say that wasn't one of them, but we'll have the staff look at that and we'll report to you accordingly. There certainly are many possible treatments to provide safe pedestrian crossing points. The solution is dependent on each individual site and the constraints that are provided around that site, but thank you for the question.
The second question from Ms. Duckham reads, I am aware that the beautiful flora and fauna in Ainsbury is under threat from the domestic cats in the residential area. Some residents informed me that council will not enforce restrictions. How is or does council justify this inaction? Mr. Luke Shannon, General Manager Corporate Services, to respond.
Thank you, Linda, for your question. I presume from your question you're referring to the prohibition of cats in the Ainsbury estate. By way of background, when the developer first commenced that subdivision probably 10 years ago or more, they decided to put in place what's known as a covenant on the site. The covenant addressed a range of issues in terms of building types and styles of home, but they also chose at that time to put in place a covenant that prohibited cat keeping from the Ainsbury estate. The covenant is not a council control. Rather, it's one that applies to each resident there, in essence, a contract between residents and the body corporate. So, in fact, council has no ability and no role in enforcing that provision which applies to the Ainsbury estate. Thank you.
Next question is from Michelle Spiteri, who is in the gallery. And the question reads, council has been made aware of the increased heavy articulated traffic on Troops Road South, which has caused ongoing safety concerns for residents that use the road regularly. What is council's plan? What is council's plan to monitor the situation until appropriate action is taken to divert these trucks? And can the maintenance, bracket, regrading, rolling and watering down of the surface, etc., close bracket, of the road be increased substantially to allow for the degradation of the road surface that these constant heavy articulated vehicles are causing? Peter Bean, General Manager, Planning and Development, to respond.
Thanks for the question, Michelle. Look, this was raised at last council meeting, and whilst the question is similar to that of the last council meeting, there are some slight differences in it. Troops Road is a Class 1 road. It's inspected every 2 weeks and it's graded every 4 weeks or more regularly if the two-weekly inspection indicates the need to do so. Articulated trucks can legally use the road. This regime of inspection and grading is the highest level allocated to a road under its control, and Council believes this to be an adequate level of service for the road in question. In regard to the second part of your question, sort of as an established road reserve, the trucks, as I said, are allowed to use the road. However, we have discussed the matter with Vic Roads to take enforcement action regarding over-dimensioned or over-mass heavy vehicles using Troops Road South, and this was raised at our meeting last Thursday with Vic Roads. Council has also made a decision to install advisory signs to dissuade trucks from using Troops Road South. But again, we require the assistance of Vic Roads to enforce the signs that we will be putting up. And we will certainly continue our discussions with the land development contractors to encourage the trucks to use the sealed sections of road to haul earthworks rather than the unsealed roads, and having people like yourself having to suffer those situations. Yes. Okay, that's fine. I'll, in the letter of response, I'll provide the regime of when it's been graded. Okay, sure.
Next question is from Mr. Mario Kasia, and Mr. Kasia is in the gallery. His question reads, my public question with respect is about significant landscape strategy and a green wedge If it is private land, they should be in or on title to earn, or they should be entitled to earn a living off their property or run a business with not too much red tape. As to start and as they build it, they can employ some local youth, cut down youth jobless rate, and create some hope and opportunities and reward. As I noticed the booklet of Venture Melton Business Prospectus, we are pleading to not put up barriers to all councillors and planning departments, designers of planning, that we must create good land and planning economics to support local business and attract future investments, like the Keisha family property, that they want to develop their land and build 200 rent affordable housing units to help first home buyers and a secondary school and other services non-government. This will be $1 billion of economic value over 20 years and would help fix some 600 first home buyers. Mr. Keisha has appended approximately 20 pages of documents to the question, so I refer that to Mr. Bean.
Thanks for the question, Mario. It's terrific you've been so succinct this evening in the preparation of the question. I'll do my best to answer it for you. Look, the significant landscape strategy seeks to identify and protect areas of landscape character and significant landscape features such as volcanoes, waterways and forested areas within the municipality based on an assessment of the aesthetic, environmental, social and other values of the landscape. The strategy does not propose any changes to the Green Wedge Zone. The Green Wedge Zone is an existing provision within the Melton Planning Scheme that sets out developments that are as of right and may be considered subject to a planning permit application or which are prohibited under the Green Wedge Zone. The Significant Landscape Strategy does recommend that planning controls such as a significant landscape overlay are revised and implemented into the Melton Planning Scheme to guide the design and siting of development in sensitive locations such as the volcanic cones, but the overlay itself does not prohibit development. Cones. Yep. That's fine, Mario. I'll make sure I do it myself. I will do it. Thanks, Mario.
The next question is from A. Tuvana and Ms. Tuvana in the gallery. Question reads: at a recent council event at Witchmount Winery to celebrate International Women's Day, council was patting their back for having 5 female councillors. Council took the credit but failed to admit to all the women present that it was not council that put these women into position, but the voting electors on election day. Council's current executive, bracket 100% male, close bracket, clearly depicts their position on having women amongst their ranks. They have none, obviously not interested in equality of genders, let alone gender parity. Can council indicate why they have ignored their responsibility in this regard? So in response, while it is true, and I acknowledge that the electors determine the makeup of council, it is also true that Melton has a recent history of a large number of female candidates at local government elections. And this can be attributed in part to the observed makeup of the council with strong female representation over a number of years, and the work the council has participated in with the Municipal Association of Victoria, the Local Government Women's Association, and the Department of Local Government to promote female participation in representative government. Council is an equal opportunity employer, and all positions of the council within the council are publicly advertised, and there is fair and open competition, with the best applicant being appointed to each position. Under our equal opportunity policy, we have gender equity on interview panels, and as I said, the most appropriate candidate is appointed. Whilst the current executive is 100% male, and that is correct. There have not been any vacancies on the executive for the last 5 years, so that may well change if and when vacancies do occur. And I note that the two most recent managers, so third line senior staff appointed at council, have both been female officers. Next question is also from Ms. Tuvana, and it reads, what is the standard practice according to council policy when a request is made by a member of the public to meet with their elected councillors? A. How long must someone expect to wait for such a meeting to occur? And B. What are the requirements prior to such a meeting? In response, I do advise that no council policy on councillors meeting with residents exists. Standard practice, however, is that any request is referred to the individual councillor or councillors that the meeting is sought with. Liaison generally occurs either directly between the resident and the relevant councillor or via the admin support staff who assist councillors in carrying out their duties. The timing of any meeting is also to some degree dependent upon the urgency or the currency of the matter which is sought to be met on, and the whether it is an individual councillor that is sought to be met with or the collective councillors. The general requirements that are made of any person requesting a meeting with